Accession number 31415.
Real one. Could you tell me when and where you were born, Mr. Brown?
I was born the 14th of the 12th, 1932, in Dagenham, Essex, in the village of Dagenham. They were still building Beckendry Heath Estate at that time.
Now, could you tell us a bit about the family background? You know, what your parents did for a living, what the family, give us an idea of what the family was like.
Well, my dad, when I was born, he was in Civvy Street, and he started work after he came out of the army in the Ford Motor Company at Dagenham.
Because the War Museum, you know, tell us a bit about your father's military career. Had he served in the Great War or was
No. He joined the army about 19. I'm not sure of the date, but I think he went in the army about 1920. Well, he was born in 1906. And he went in the army. He said, I'm not going down no bloody mine for nobody. And he didn't. And he ran away and joined the army.
He was from the northeast, was he? I
think. Yeah, he came from a place called Henley Hall in Durham. And he was the eldest of 14 kids. And his father was the canary keeper, my granddad. Anyway, he came south and he joined the Royal Artillery at Woolwich. And I don't know much in between, but I know he went in the Royal Horse Artillery and he was posted to India when he finished his training. And then he came back from India, and I don't know what happened after that, but I know he came out of the army and he never went north. He stayed south and he got a job at the Ford Motor Company, but in between time he met my mother, who was a chambermaid, I believe she was a chambermaid, to Lady Bowes Lyon in the 1920s.
Now, is that the Lady Bowes?
Yeah, the Queen Mother. She was Lady Bowes Lyon at the time. And because my mother came from up there, my mother was recommended because she was also a maid in Skelton Castle to the squire in Skelton in North Yorkshire. From there on, they met and they married. And then I came along in 1932. My sister came along in 1934. And then my youngest brother came along in 1945. it was a mistake.
Now, how well off was the family? I mean,
we weren't well off, actually. We were just ordinary working class people. But my parents always brought me up to believe, and my grandparents, because my grandmother and grandfather of my father were down south, and they lived in a road called Bush Elms Road in Hornchurch. And we lived at the time over in Hornchurch in Lyndhurst Drive. And my grandfather had the choice of the house on the end. And my mother and father said, oh, well, we'll move. So they moved into when they moved to that house at 111, they moved into 109, and we moved to 111. And that's where I really start my life, in 111 Bush Elms Road. And of course, then the war came along.
So was it a fairly? I mean, you were reason. I mean, your dad stayed in employment though. I mean,
yeah, he was working at Ford Motor Company.
Right through the depression.
Yeah. So anyway, when they opened the Ford Motor, that's where he started. And I'll go on a bit. And my mum and my sister and me, this particular day, my dad went to work at Ford's. And my mum was getting us ready for school. And it was about 8:30, 8:45. The key in the door went and my dad walked through the door. So my mother said to me, Dad, what the hell are you doing home? Because they were typical North Country people. He said, get me suitcase. He said, there's just been a certain number come over on the radio. I've got a report back to Woolwich today. So she got his coat. And he went upstairs and he got his reserve book and he got his different things. And the next thing, he was off down the road to get the train. And then we see him 3 weeks to a month later. And he came through the door and he had all his kit on, rifle, the lot. And he said, I'm home, he said, for 14 days. And when he went back on 14 days, we went to Victoria Station. And I can always remember Vera Lynn was singing at the station, and they were all getting on the train.
Was this before the war had actually started?
Yeah, and my dad was going away, and I knew what he was going away for, because he told me. Anyway, he survived, and he went through to Dunkirk. We never heard nothing at all. And he came back from Dunkirk. He was one of the lucky ones. He came back from Dunkirk, and he got posted to Maidstone. He was in hospital at Maidstone. And my mother and my dad got some digs for us while he was in hospital.
Hang on. What about the actual outbreak of war? Do you remember the
yeah.
The
oh
day
yeah,
war
the day.
You
know, on the outbreak.
We'll come back
of
to
war.
You when your dad comes back. I mean,
on the outbreak.
You were only 8, were you?
Yeah.
Or whatever.
Seven or eight.
Yeah.
And we was out in the street, outside the house, and we was playing. And I've never forgot this. This fella come running up the road. It was a man come running up the road. And he was spinning a rattle. I'd never heard one of them before. It was about that big. And it was making a hell of a row. And he had a gas mask around his neck and a tin rattle. And he was running up the road with this rattle. And he told us to go indoors. So we went indoors. And then the next thing we know, my mum puts the wireless on. I said, there's a man. She heard it. She come out. So we all went indoors. The kids all ran indoors, frightened more than anything. And then the next thing we heard on the radio was, this morning at 11 o'clock, we are now at war with Germany. But at the same time, this boat come running up the road. And so that all settled down and we went back
out.
How
did you feel as an 8-year-old? Did you understand that? I mean, your dad had just gone away.
Yeah, but we didn't know because, you see, I'd never experienced anything like this. And as kids, most of the kids didn't at that age. We never experienced it. I mean, at the time, just before that, was the Spanish Civil War. But my granddad and my dad used to talk about it. But, you know, nobody in our generation at that particular time knew what war was all about. It wasn't until the phony war ended.
Now, hang on. What about, did you get issue with a gas mask?
Oh, yeah.
When did that happen?
That happened not long after. We was at school. We was at school and they came round the school. I was at school in those days at a school called Park Lane between Hornchurch and Romford. And they came round the school. And this is where we got issue with our gas masks. I can't remember the exact time and date, but it was before, actually, you know, the war had been declared. But we'd had no problems. And we all came home with this cardboard box on a bit of string round our shoulders.
Have you tried it on?
Yeah, we had to try on to fit.
What was it like to wear?
It wasn't very nice.
Why not?
It was very tight round here.
Round the cheeks?
And underneath the chin. And we found it very hard to breathe at first. And it was sort of misting up on the lens as you look through, because I didn't wear glasses then. And it was misting up, and you tend to get frightened. And my teacher, Mr. Percy, he, a very tall man, he was in the First World War. He'd been in the First World War. And he was there calming us all down because we was at different classes. Anyway, we got issued with them and we came home from school and we was a novelty. So we had to take them every day from there on in to school. And
were there any, did you have an air raid shelter built
during the phony war? What they did at first, they were building air raid shelters. And before my dad went away, I've got to go back to that. Before my dad went away, my dad and my granddad, his dad, dug our shelter out, our Anderson shelter, at the top of the garden. And he dug his own next door with my dad and my granddad, because my granddad was still working. And he worked for the council at the time, and that's what his job was put on. Digging out the hole to put the Anderson shelter in.
Now, what were they like? What was your Anderson shelter like? Do you remember?
Yeah, I can see it now. It went in the ground, and I suppose sticking out of the ground, it was about that high.
That's about 3-4 foot.
Four foot, 5 foot. But when you got in it and you dropped down in the hole, you could say it was 8 to 10 feet, you see.
And what was in there?
Well, at first there was nothing. It was just, what's the name? And then the council came round before we actually used it. And
in
they
the
concreted it. up to halfway. They put a concrete base and concrete walls. And then we got issued with bunks, depending on how many was in the family. So there was only three of us. So we had two bunks at the back. No, on the side, each side. Two on one side and my mother on this side. And we had a couple of oil lamps, an old sitting on the concrete, because it had a shelf about that wide. We had candles and two oil lamps, small oil lamps. We had an old radio set, a battery job. We had a chair, and the chair we used to use to get out of the air raid shelter. And the times my mother used to bang her head, as she survived, I never know. She always caught her head on the corrugated iron.
Now, was there any question of you being evacuated? When the war first started?
No question at all. Why? My parents had already decided. Because by then, my grandfather and grandmother next door to me moved back to Hetley Hole. My grandmother and my mum's sisters, and she had one brother down here, but two of her sisters lived in the north. One lived in a place called Broughton. One lived in a place called Ryop at Sunderland, just outside Sunderland. And then there was my dad's side of the family who lived in Hetton. Was just my grandma, and his sister, my Aunt Ada. My Aunt Ada was married to a miner, and he was also an auxiliary fireman. And what we did, they decided, my mother and father decided, that in the event of evacuation, we would go to my grandmother and grandfather at Hetley Hole for a period of time. And then we would go to my Aunt Bridge, my mum's sister, in a place called Broughton in North Yorkshire, between Whitby and Redcar. The nearest town to it, big town, was Saltburn by sea. So that's when we did get evacuated, so that's where we went.
Now, when did you go there?
Oh, I would imagine it would be about the late 1940s, when the bombs first started dropping.
1940, that'd be 1940 itself. You mean early 1940s?
Late 1940, because we was here in the shelter when it first started, started. We was in the shelter.
Now, the next thing is rationing. When did the rationing start to bite?
Oh, I can't remember when that...
Do you remember food rationing?
Yeah.
Tell us about that then. How did that affect you?
Well, it didn't affect us at all, because my mother and my mother was a very good cook. Outstanding cook, my mother was fantastic. And she made things ends meet. She could skin rabbits. We used to get rabbits from different people. We did all sorts of kinds of things to eke out the rations itself. But we never went short. We didn't either overeat. They definitely never overeat like people of today. We ate moderate. And according to history now, we are the finest generation that fed ourselves properly, even on rationing.
Now, what about clothes rationing?
Oh, clothes. We used to live on hand-me-downs. My mother would make... different people would hand down from different, not just relations, but neighbours. When they saw you was growing and you couldn't get trousers, because it was all short trousers in them days, short trousers, knee-length socks and boots with Blakey's in, and toe and heel plates. And you always used to get them for your Christmas. Once a pair of boots a year, and that's what you've lived in all your life. Pair of boots, no shoes, just boots. Later on you got shoes. And as the rationing went on, we didn't starve, and we didn't envy other people. What we did miss, virtually through rationing, what we did miss was oranges, bananas, pomegranates, because I loved pomegranates when I was a kid. I used to love them. And things like that, you know, exotic fruits.
What about sweets? Because they were
rationed. Oh, well, sweets were rationed, but we weren't great sweet eaters. I wasn't a great sweet eater. Not until later on in life I became mainly chocolate.
Now, so how did life change in the first year then, before the bombing started? You know, the phony war. Did life change much? You just
no, you just went to school normal.
Now, tell me about your school then. How was what was that like?
My school was quite good. It had elderly teachers, because all the young ones volunteered to go. All the men, the young men, they actually volunteered. They didn't have to go. They volunteered. And a lot of the women left and joined the auxiliary forces. And where the women teachers was concerned, a lot of them got sent back because they were medically unfit. But most of our teachers were still elderly. Mr. Percy was in the First World War. He was the only man teacher in our junior school.
Now, were a lot of the children evacuated, or were most of
them? Yeah, not until about 1941, because a lot of parents, and a lot of them suffered under evacuation. A lot of them had a terrible life. They were made into slaves, cheap labour. And that is a fact, that is not a fictional story, because I knew a family, the Fisher family, who lived in Clifton Road. Three of their sons were sent to a farm, and they were up at 5 o'clock in the morning milking cows and that before they were allowed to go to school. And then they were doing the same thing at night time. He said it was all right at first, the novelty, but it wore off because it became a chore and it had to be done whether you liked it or not. And then when the bombing started...
Now, your dad got back from Dunkirk first.
Yeah.
So what happened then when your dad got back?
When my dad got back, he
because I thought you said you moved when he came back, or was that...
No, we moved before then.
Where did you move to?
Next door to my granddad and grandma in Bush Elms Road.
Yeah, that's what you said.
That's where he went, because he came in from work from Ford's. And what happened was he came home, and then he couldn't go to work. He never went to work. He was disabled, and he was on disability.
What had happened? Had he been wounded?
Yeah. Yeah, and he also had stomach problems. And eventually, he did get a job. I've got to think now. Oh no, he went on a... He didn't go back to the Ford Motor Company because he was unfit. And he didn't work for a number of years.
So not until after the war.
Yeah, he went... Well, I went to work before he did.
Okay, let's go back to... So what happened when the bombing started then?
Well, then my dad and mum decided that we would definitely be sent up north.
So had the bombing started first?
Yeah.
Well, tell us about the bombing first then.
Well, what happened was they started bombing, and then what happened was they were getting rather close. There was bombs dropping round out. Our street never got bombed. But all the way round us, where we lived, that got bombed. The school got bombed. Most of the park lane at the top end running into Brentwood Road, that was bombed to flat. That was flattened.
What do you remember of the air raids? What were they like for you?
Oh, Jesus. It was horrendous. They had artillery. The AK-AK guns were in... We had a park next street, not the street... Next street, behind that street, we had a park with a giant circle in it. And the AK-AK guns used to be brought in there every night. And the noise from the AK-AK guns was worse than the guns from than the bombs coming down. Because they never actually came... We had incendiary bombs, but we never had explosive bombs. And the nearest bombs that came down was at the bottom of our road, because it was quite a long road, Bush Elms Road. And they landed down on the bottom of Bush Elms, at the second half of Bush Elms Road, in Park Lane. All along that part of the road of Bush Elms, there was a gap. Then it bombed again. And they hit Thomas Moyes' coal yard. And when we went down to go to school that morning, after the raid, there was all dead horses in the road. No heads, no bodies, some of them had no legs, missing. and it was a terrible sight, but we took no notice of it. We just walked past and went into the school gate.
So you'd spend these raids in the shelter, would you?
Yeah.
What was it like in there during a raid? I mean, how scary or otherwise?
Well, you felt safer. You felt a lot safer. Well, anyway, after a couple of years, well, I don't think it was that long. I can remember being brought home. My dad said, oh, he said, this bloody war, he said, because that's how he used to speak. He said, I'm going to have the kids home, he said.
Now, hang on, you haven't got away yet, if you see what I mean.
On the way up to my grandparents. In
so when was that, 40 or 41?
About 41. We went up to my grandparents in Henley Hall. And I can't remember how we went. I don't know whether we went by car or by coach. I know we never went by train. And we eventually got up there, because it used to be, in those days, it was a hell of a journey, because it was only the old A1. And normally by car, to get to Henton, it nearly took you 12 hours to get there. And I'd already been up there before the war started by car with my Uncle Tommy and Uncle Jim. They were single then. They had a car. They had an old 14.9 Ford. And it used to take us hours to get there. Anyway, we went up there, but I can't remember whether we got a coach or whether we went by car.
Doesn't matter much. So what happened when you got there?
Well,
how did you settle in?
Yeah, we settled in with my grandparents. And my my mother stayed for a few weeks. My dad went back. My dad went back to make sure, because in those days, believe it or not, in this country, if you got bombed or people knew you'd gone, they would break in and loot. And that was very rampant, looting. And especially of bombed buildings. They looted. They had no conscience whatsoever. And when my dad went back, he stayed on his own and my mum stayed with us.
Now, what was life like up there? Because it's very different up there.
Yeah, but... yeah, well, it was. At first, we had these cockneys, they said. These cockneys, they used to say. These cockneys coming up here and all that lot. So I said to them, I'm a Londoner boy. I said, I come from Dagenham, yeah. But I said, my dad comes from here. My dad come from here. And my mother was a Yorkshire woman. I said, and my aunts and uncles live up here. And my great-grandfather lives at Seamarber. So after that...
Was this with local children?
Yeah, when I went to school. I went to two schools.
Hang on. So after that, did you get on well with the local kids?
Yeah, after a time. Well, I got on after a period, you do. Kids do eventually, don't you? And
tell me about the school then. How did you do
it? I went to one called... I went to a school in Hetton, in Lower Hetton. I can't remember the name of the school, but I went to the junior school first in Lower Hetton, and that was very Victorian. I always remember the school. There's this headmaster who took the school, the class that I was in, and he had one of those very tall Victorian desks, stood about that high with a sloping desktop. And he used to sit up there, and he had a cane across the front of it. And if he was talking, he'd whack the desk with the cane and you'd jump with fear and your eyes would nearly pop out of your head. And he was very, very Victorian. I'm here to be obeyed, the kind of person. Anyway, we got used to it and we knew how things went. And I settled down quite well. And then my sister was also in the same school, but she was in a class lower than me.
Now, did you stay at your grandparents, or did you move about?
We stayed there for so many months. And then my mother came up and took us to my aunt Bridge at Broughton.
At where?
Broughton. Broughton. North Yorkshire. And she took us... And then she took me to a school at the top of Broughton, and I can't remember the name of that school. But that was virtually the same in character.
So when would that be? Still in 41 or into 42? How long?
That'd be 42. About 1942.
It's all right, approximate. I know it's difficult to tell when you're that age.
So,
how did you fit in at Broughton?
A lot better. Lot easier. Yeah, we had quite a nice life at Broughton. When we used to go to school, we used to always walk to school, and we walked everywhere. And when we used to come home from school, we had outside my aunt's house, my aunt Bridget's house, we had rather a large green, quite a large green in it. And there was houses at one end, and this large green, and it was a circle. And the cars used, and the milkman with the horse cart used to go round that way one way and go out the other way, delivering. The postman did the same. And we had quite a happy life. It was very good from word go.
And how were you doing at school? Because you started to go for lots.
I was never very good.
Why not, do you think?
I just wasn't interested. I could never get... One of the things that always bothered me and used to get on my nerves, and I started to hate school, because I couldn't do arithmetic. I could not do arithmetic. I could do my times table up to 12, easy. But I couldn't do my arithmetic. I couldn't do sums. And that used to bother me. The one thing that I could do at school, which I in my school reports was good, and no matter where I went, I could do English. And I love composition. I don't know what they call it today, but it was called composition. And I could write stories and make sense of stories. And
any other subjects you liked?
In junior school, you didn't get any of that kind of thing. And I didn't mind PT. I love PT and I love sports.
Now, what about being in the countryside? How did that? You were I'm not quite sure how countryfied Dagenham and Hornchurch
were. Well,
we were
built up. I lived in Hornchurch and it was quite built up. But we wasn't far away from the countryside in those days. I mean, when I came home eventually.
Hang on. So it wasn't like being in some rural paradise up there?
No, well, we had big parks to play in.
No, I mean, when you were in when you went north.
North. We used to walk. When I came down, when I lived there in Broughton, in Woodside it was, the name of the turning was called Woodside. And I'd walk to the top of the turning, which was the main road, to Redcar and to Loftus. Well, that road went through country lanes. It was the main road, but you come out of there and you was in the countryside. Come to the top of the road and you was in the countryside. And when we used to do a right turn, there was a couch, we'd do a right turn and then there was a road going off of there, a little road going off, and it used to go downhill. And there was a wood, a beautiful wood. It was fantastic. We used to spend hours down this wood. And then there was all the farmland onto the left of this wood. And as we used to go down, there was a big cow shed. And I never knew the farmer's name, but we always used to go in the cow shed and see the cows and the calves. And he used to call us in when there was a calf being born to let you see the calf being born. And that was the sort of life it was at Broughton. Really lovely. We enjoyed ourselves. And one of the things we used to do, being boys, we used to, and the girls used to come with us, and there was, in the time of the season, when the crops used to grow, they used to grow swedes and mangel wurzels for the cattle to feed in the winter. And we used to go in the fields, and we used to uplift these swedes and put the tops back in the ground, and then go down in the woods with our penknives and cut them up for the girls. And we used to sit by the trees, skin them. And the girls used to sit there, and we used to cut up these swedes, and we'd sit there for hours eating. And then when it was time to go home for dinner or tea, oh, I don't want none, Aunt Bridge. You've been at them bloody swedes again, haven't you? She used to say, she knew what we'd all been up to. It was quite a pleasant life. Really, really pleasant. And that's where my family would move back to.
And when did you leave Broughton?
Oh, we left after about 4 or 5 months.
So just in 42. You were only there 4 or 5 months.
Yeah. And then we went to...